Hi everybody, Steve Savitsky, and today we have a wonderful guest from Yeshiva, from Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Moshe Benovitz, who is the director of the NCSY Kollel, also a Rebbe in Reshit Yerushalayim, and a superb educator, and an all-around terrific, terrific person who I know very well. And Rabbi Benovitz, thank you for coming on the program. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for the very kind words of introduction.
They would just believe me. If I could have gone on for the full 20 minutes just talking about you, Rabbi Benovitz, it would have been easy to do. So, in the edition that we have coming up of the Jewish Action, which is going to be the summer of 2012, we actually delve into the whole issue of technology, social media, and so on. And you were kind enough to write an article, a really, really wonderful article about it. And I'm sure everyone who reads the Jewish Action is going to enjoy it. Reading it, I just had some questions that, first of all, let's talk about attention span. You're an educator. You've been an educator for a while. I mean, is it really a fact that today the kids just don't have the same attention span that kids had 10, 15, 20 years ago?
From my experience, it certainly is the case. Although it's spoken about very often, which can certainly give the you're tempted to say that it's being overstated, but my sense is that it's not being overstated at all. There is a fundamental change, and I don't think it's anything new. I think it's something which has been accelerated, but began with other technological advancements, even 20, 30, 40 years ago. People's style of learning and obtaining information was different, and certainly the internet has exacerbated that, and the personal handheld devices for the internet even more so, in the sense that people are not used to focusing on ideas or concepts for very long, and the fact that people assume that the information given to them is going to be very easily digestible, that it's going to be readily apparent what it is that they're doing. The notion of working to uncover nuggets of information or insight is a little bit foreign. It's an unnatural way of learning for many of our students of this generation.
But that's really going to change. I mean, you talk about Limud Kodesh. You talk about learning Gemara. I mean, the whole essence of learning Gemara is to delve and to dig and to spend time and to understand. I mean, it sounds like, you know, we may have some serious problems down the road.
There's no question it's an obstacle. And I think it needs to be confronted from two different perspectives. Number one, we're dealing with good people. And we can make the case, and we need to make the case, for why that unnatural effort is worth it. And at the same time, we need to deal with the reality as it is, and maybe make some of the methods of teaching a little bit closer to what they're used to. I'm not suggesting a radical transformation either of curricula or of methods, but a recognition of what we're dealing with. One of the points that I made in the article is that as educators, there's this enormous responsibility that we have to recognize the realities on the ground, to understand the nature of the students, because we're not speaking to blank walls, we're not speaking to tape recorders. We're speaking to people who are coming with their own backgrounds and ideas and their approaches and their styles, and the better teachers and educators recognize that. Too often, though, we stop with that, and we're content to be sociologists in the place of being educators. Right. We don't get to choose the people that we educate. Those who do, from a particular narrow career perspective, that's not even what I'm referring to, and that's few and far in between. Educators, and by which I mean in the greater sense of the word, community leaders and those who are building schools and institutions and models of learning, in addition to the men in the field and women in the field who are actually in the classroom, we don't get to choose who we educate and what they're bringing to the table. We have to find a way to educate them in exactly the way that they are. And I believe we can do that. And the way that we do that, like I said, is this two-pronged approach. Number one, in recognizing that we have to make the case. We don't have a captive audience, and we need to make the case for Torah more than ever before. And number two, to come up with the methods that allow us to reach them in a way that they're more used to and is more natural to them.
Well, isn't that, in a way, kind of rewriting some of the curriculum? I mean, the regular way of learning a blot Gemara may not apply anymore. You may have to find another way of trying to achieve the same goal.
most effective change, first of all, is gradual, especially in the educational arena. Could we get to the point where over a period of years, a decade or two, things look radically different because of the accelerated changes of technology? I think it's possible, but I'm also relatively conservative when it comes to that. And I have a great deal of confidence in a lot of the tried and true methods. And that's why I think more subtle shifts can be effective. I'll give you a great example.
Okay.
It occurred to me not long ago that, and again, this is something which is far from radical, but it occurred to me not long ago that that some of the challenges that educators have had in the past in teaching Gemara, its own lack of internal focus, the fact that Gemara jumps all over the place, the fact that pages are so busy, well, isn't it true that a page of Gemara looks rather similar to a website where there are different places, almost, we don't have, unless you're holding a Schottenstein iPad Talmud in your hand, generally speaking, our students of today are not going to have the ability to actually click on a word and have a Tosfos jump out at them, but the makeup of the page, which was so challenging before, may be something which speaks to our students a little bit more. To jump to a Tosfos, to be able to construct a Gemara Shir that's built on shorter attention spans, a line, and then a sidetrack point in Tosfos, and then maybe hitting refresh or going back a page to where we were before in the Gemara, there could be things that were challenging 20 years ago that are in fact a little bit easier. Meaning I think we have the capacity to construct our lessons and our teaching of even a Daf Gemara in ways that go very nicely with the mindsets of our students. But the attention spans, like you said, there's no question is a challenge.
But what you're saying is, in other words, it's really a reformatting of the Tzuras Hadaf, the way we know it for centuries. You know, we may have to change that. And, you know, you mentioned the Schottenstein, you know, the iPad. And, you know, we're sitting here now with, it's just a few weeks before the Siyum HaShas. And we know this is going to be a new thing that's going to be unveiled at the Siyum HaShas. And I think it may change completely the way, you know, just the way Sansino changed and Schottenstein changed and now the Internet. I mean, this could be a game changer as far as how people learn Gemara.
I think it could be, and I'm not sure that that's a bad thing, but I would like to see, and I think it's realistic to see, it bringing us back to an appreciation, understanding of the pages themselves. I don't think it needs to replace. I think it could be a tool we use to make the tried and true more accessible. And I think that's a very healthy direction to go in, and not an altogether unfeasible one. I think that's a realistic possibility of how things could emerge. And I think what they've done successfully, but I think a teacher can do this with or without a smart board in his own shear of a traditional blockchain. Year of, like I said, you recognize the attention spans. I mean, again, you know, it seems at times, and again, it's more an illusion than reality, but it seems at times that Gemara was written by people with short attention spans. The way in which the tangents pop up on a page, the way in which we have to think, what were we talking about in the first place? And of course, there's a rhyme and a reason to the organization of Gemara, but that's something that could be utilized in teaching that will work well. The original point that we started with the fact that Gemara contains truths that need to be uncovered and require patience, there's no question that's a bigger challenge because there's no art scroll or iPad in the world that's going to do that. And that's why I mentioned we need to make the case for why that effort is worthwhile and why it's okay to be reprogrammed a little bit in the way that we think. But it's a challenge.
But you mentioned in the article, you say, we simply need educators who are up to the task of offering what no game, movie clip, or instant message can deliver, the thrill and deep satisfaction of connection to Torah on its own most sublime level. How do we get those people?
They have to believe it themselves first and foremost. It becomes a self-sustaining system. The more people that believe that themselves, the more people amongst educators, I'll tell you honestly, I believe we have amongst many educators not a crisis of competency, but a crisis of confidence. They themselves are wowed and amazed by all of the other both educational and technological advancements and all of the ideas that are out there. And they themselves need to be confident in what they're doing. On a practical level, in addition to recruiting and training better teachers when they're young, it involves in-services and master teachers being involved and giving confidence to teachers. There are a lot of teachers out there that lack the confidence even in the material that they're doing. And sometimes, and it relates back to the point we were discussing a minute ago, sometimes I believe that when you have educators that are bemoaning advances in technology and their students' lack of attention and interest in the material, they're talking about their own crisis of confidence in that material sometimes as well. And we need to give support to those teachers, and we need to educate our students so that they can become the teachers that have the confidence in the eternal truth and relevance of what they're teaching to be able to give that over. But it's a doable mission.
Okay, but now I want to just kind of go to perhaps a different aspect of the article, and you talk about the year in Israel. And you say, Today a student can spend a year without a significant adjustment to his social circle, entertainment choices, or cultural framework. So is the year in Israel still so important, or because of all these changes, perhaps it's not as crucial as it was, or not as meaningful as it was?
Well, I think we'd have to rephrase the question a bit, because I don't have any hesitation in answering that it's as crucial as ever, but it's difficult to reap the rewards and benefits of the year of Israel. It's a lot easier for it to be unproductive. I don't think that makes it any less crucial. It just means that having a successful experience with it is all the more challenging. I think the percentage, and there always were people who had more and less productive experiences in the year in Israel, but my sense, and it's a strong sense, and it's not merely anecdotal, is that the number of people who are using the year unproductively, and that doesn't have to mean out on the streets and bars or being involved in illegal activities, just using the year unproductively, is rising and is rising in a frighteningly steady way. Again, I don't think that makes the year any less important because it's equally unfortunate than it ever was before that it happened. In fact, the year of Israel, one could argue, is even more important. But we have to deal with the realities that are there. The realities that are there that students in Israel, one of the secrets to success, and there was more than one, of the year in Israel 20 years ago, was that you had a captive audience with very, very few alternatives of what to do with their time. And you had an audience that was simply taken out of the milieu that they had grown up in, both socially, culturally, educationally, and was by definition entering something new. And in the excerpt you quoted from the article, I'm stating quite clearly that that is simply not the case. The circle of friends does not change. The education doesn't change. It's as important as ever, but it's harder to reap the benefits. There's no question about it.
All right. Now, you know, in light of the recent Asifa that occurred, where it seems that there is a component in the Orthodox Jewish world that says the only way that we can survive is to really filter this out or even eliminate it or pretend that it's not there, because we've got to build these very high walls. And you seem clearly in the camp that says we can and should embrace their potential and direct the momentum they generate towards Torah goals and ideals. I presume you don't necessarily agree, nor do I, by the way, but I presume you don't necessarily agree with that philosophy of where we are today.
That's correct, but I say that with a fair amount of reluctance. I understand the alternative point of view and where they're coming from. There's a part of me that's tempted to say, let's build the world's walls higher and try to keep this out, because it's just a losing battle any other way. But I don't think it's realistic, and B, I think we will be turning our back on great potential good. I used in the article, at least alluded to, an example of the fact that just an intellectual curiosity and a fact-checking mechanism that students have access to, the way they process and evaluate information, although not 100% reliable in its own right, I don't think we should be overly cynical, though, about the tools available to our students that are second nature to them on the internet. And I think that a failure to embrace those tools is going to cause us tremendous difficulties. The fact that statements that were made by their rabbis in high schools in the year in Israel and university 20, 30 years ago could go unchallenged, and a charismatic, emphatic educator could make a statement, and you'd have no choice but to shrug your shoulder and accept it. That's not the reality that our students have anymore. And we have to find ways to say, you know, let's lay it out there. Let's pursue truth. Let's make statements, and then let's challenge them and use the wealth of information in the internet out there to see if those arguments hold water. In the Kyiv community, for example, that they're coming to grips with the fact that some of the arguments, historical arguments, philosophical arguments, that, like I said, a charismatic educator could tell a person off the street and who would know better, is checked instantly on a handheld device that's pulled out of a pocket. And if those arguments, you know, do not hold water, then we've done more damage than good. But we need to adjust to that, and we should adjust to that.
Do you have an example of that? I'm just curious. If you don't, it's okay, but I'm curious what you mean by that.
Yeah. I think there are examples, and again, this is probably beyond the scope of this limited discussion because there are obviously complexities and layers here. But examples like mass revelation at Sinai being the only way possible when you have challenges from other sources, and the fact that Torah seems to have been forgotten in certain periods explicitly in the Navi and the like, and that the chain of the Masorah was not clearly, there is certainly reason to believe that there were times where it was, if not broken, but that it was down to a precious few. That's a challenge to, just to use one example, that mass revelation argument of sorts. In the scientific realm, in the archaeological realm, we need to be able to know that there is information at the fingertips of our students that, of course, we have answers to, and of course, we have ways of responding to, but to just throw arguments out there, they're not going to, nor should they, simply accept at face value.
Okay, good. No, I think that's great, and I like the way you put in the article how you say instead of putting away your iPhones, take out your iPhones, and now let's verify certain information. Let's utilize the technology today to integrate learning and Torah, that they kind of coexist together, and you know, we have to find ways, because I think, as you say, you know, we've got to be practical about this also. I mean, today, you know, in your handheld device, you've got more information than anyone ever had before in the history of mankind. And how could you expect people not to have it? So they will, especially as the prices go down and more accessible. How could we expect,
right,
you know, a year from now, or 2 years, or 3 years from now, that
sure,
it won't work? So we've got to integrate it, and we've got to find the right teachers who perhaps have to be retrained. We have to modify some of our educational philosophy, and we have to deal with this as a tool that strengthens Torah as opposed to compromises Torah. That's where we are today.
That's right.
You know, and I think that's great. I think that's really the message that you're really coming across with, which is really a wonderful, wonderful message. So you're optimistic. I mean, I know you're always optimistic because I know you. So you're always optimistic, but you're optimistic that once again we'll rise to the challenge. We'll find a way to deal with this and integrate it into our world.
Torah will rise to the challenge. We just have to let it. We have to find ways to let it impact on our students. We want our Rabbanim, and we want the Torah to be the ultimate filter, for it to be the way in which we process ideas, and we have to earn the credibility with our students for it to do that. With more honesty, with a little bit more openness, and with a full understanding of where they're coming from and what they're dealing with.
Terrific. Well, listen, Rabbi Benowitz, I want to thank you so much. I want to encourage everyone to read Rabbi Benowitz's article in the summer edition of 2012 of the Jewish Action. And thank you for your thoughts, and I really appreciate them very much, and have a wonderful day.
Thanks for having me.